has like a Wayne said method, or is it on? Mm-hmm.
Was it your family friend? Yes. How was that?
I was born in 1913 when my father was principal of the College of Technology in Manchester. He was the youngest principal that they ever had and came from the Department of Education where he was a civil servant. And the Manchester of those pre-war days, the social life and the intellectual life of Manchester were tremendously centered on Ernest and Sheena Simon and on Eva Hubbock and her husband. And my parents were on the fringe of this circle of people. And
could I just ask you who your parents were?
My father was Maxwell Garnett, who ran the Labour Relations Union from 1918 until 1919 to 20 years before the Second War. And when I, then in 19, at the end of the First War, we came to live in Hampstead, which had been the old family home of my grandparents, paternal grandparents. And my father then was appointed as First General Secretary of the Labour Nations Union. And I was sent to St. Paul's. And who did I find, a girls' school, and who did I find in my form but one Diana Hubbock? And this created some interest with my parents, who recalled the pre-war acquaintanceship. And at that stage, Eva, who of course had been widowed in the First War, had just built this really magnificent house in the Hampstead Garden suburb. There was an occasion in the 20s when my mother asked Eva Hubbock and her daughter Diana to tea, and I declined to present myself in any sense because, as Diana was a scholar at the school and I was not, I said I couldn't possibly meet people who were scholars at the school. I suppose this must have been some weeks before I actually started there. At that stage, Diana was living with her maternal grandmother, Lady Spielman, in Cambridge Square. And so that I didn't see very much of her from the home life point of view, but
you had at least an entree to that.
But I married in the early 30s, and in about 1934, Eva asked me over to tea with her, and there I met Geoffrey Crowther, Tommy Balog, Stephen Wilson. All kinds of people who became lifelong friends of mine and my husband's. And I began a friendship with Eva, which, although I was of a different generation, was really much closer than the friendship I ever had with the daughter.
Was it the daughter who arranged that sort of interview?
Not a bit. I think Eva asked me to tea. Eva asked me, possibly as the daughter of my parents, possibly as, Iva then was a young married woman living in Hampstead, and she was a very hospitable person, and she just was interested. Then when I was elected to the LCC in 1938, we had a lot more mutual interest and contacts over education and so forth, and I'd had a particular links right back with the LCC education because my paternal grandfather had been secretary to Sidney Webb and had gone and had set up the whole transition from the London School Board to the LCC Education Authority, and in fact was Dr. William Garnett, the first education advisor to the LCC. And so Eva and I had a sphere of interest there together. But what was beginning to grow by the late 30s was her intense concern about the falling birth rate, particularly the middle class birth rate, and her interest in population matters. And I think the Population Commission was appointed 1941, anyway, it certainly was the war, because one has very, very vivid memories of the meetings in the House of Lords and Blitz and so on. Now, Eva was in, Hugh Dalton appointed me to the commission, and of course I was far the youngest, there were only three women on it anyway, and I had two young babies and was hardly then in my 30s. No, certainly I wasn't in my 30s. And but Eva was bitterly disappointed at not being appointed, because what in fact had stimulated the appointment of this commission, I'm sure, had been her paperback, The Population of Britain. And the only comfort that she derived was that I, as a kind of disciple of hers, could sit at her feet, which indeed I did for many hours, going through the papers with her and agreeing with her on points which I would raise, which were far more esoteric and learned points than I would have thought of raising. And so that in one sense she was a kind of spiritual member of the Royal Commission through her links with me. And what was one of the interesting references that I was looking back on Diana's book on Eva was one of her criticisms of the commission, which she, when speaking, when the commission had finally reported, which I think was about 48, in which she, one of her main criticisms was that, it was her most severe criticism of the report, that it concentrated too exclusively on the social and economic methods of creating a desire for larger families, to the neglect of the spiritual and psychological ones. It laid insufficient emphasis both on the happiness that comes from family life with more than two children, and on the responsibility of citizens for the survival of their own community. She quoted Dr. Garvin's criticism that never once is the suggestion made that having children brings happiness in itself. And this, I recall very vividly her disappointment that this non-materialistic, non-economic, that this more spiritual and intangible values had not at all been reflected in what the committee reported. I think in a way she was attracted to me because I was a member of the eldest of a family of six, and she, of course, having this strong maternal drive, and no doubt would have had five or six children of her own, was very sadly, of course she could only have the three, her husband being killed in the First War, and I often used to think that there were her own internal reasons for this interest in larger families. And of course, when one's thinking of the climate of the times, it has to be remembered that in 1930, when I was 17, my youngest brother was born, and my mother received letters which almost exclusively offered commiseration on this, almost associated with a disaster to have a sixth child, which she was very much welcomed and was part of her plan of life anyway. But the only person who wrote with pleasure was Lady Leighton's, whose own sixth child had been born in 19, at the same, very much at the same time. And she also, Dorothy Leighton, had received just the same experience of everybody writing in commiseration at this apparent disaster, so that one can see the sort of pattern of the time about the size of families.
And you say Eva was particularly concerned about middle class decline in family size.
Well, I think she would have. I don't know whether she would have actually phrased it in that way, but the fact was that she was a lifelong member of the Eugenics Society, and she was deeply committed to the theory that intelligence, as indeed it is an inheritable commodity, and that if the nation was going to breed itself out, so to speak, from the intelligence point of view, this must be an adverse factor for the future of the country. And she was a sort of patriotic person in that sense, of concern for the very public-spirited. But of course, her early eugenic links, I think, leads me to think that you should make contact at some stage with, as it were, the third of our trio of friends at school, which was a girl called Sheila Grant Duff. And her mother was widowed in the First War. Colonel Adrian Grant Duff, her maternal grandfather was Lord Avebury, and her mother was one of the Lubbock family. And she, Mrs. Grant Duff, was a passionate eugenics person, and in that way was a close friend of Eva's. And if you wanted to get in touch with Sheila, her name is now Mrs. Sokoloff Grant. And she was, that is Ursula Grant Duff,
yes,
and Eva Hubbock, were close friends and colleagues in the Eugenic Society. I mean, they did share this tragedy of being First World War widows, each bringing up families at that time. But
Sheila herself.
But Sheila would have. Sheila would have interesting memories of Eva. Share. But just to finish off my, I mean, I must say, when I heard, I was quite closely in touch with her, and her death came as the most incredible shock, because she,
Eva's
death, because she had by no means reached the sort of kind of lifespan that that one assumed that one would be beginning to think about people departing this world. And I have felt an extraordinary, even still, the sense of missing her. But of course, I do have other very vivid memories of her, and this was tremendously connected with the wonderful cottage on the North Cornish coast at Trianon Bay, which she built in the First War, and Trithias, it was called, and we had wonderful Oxford reading parties and school holidays and things there. And her kind of vigour and energy, and walking and swimming, and all her absolute love of that coast. And I have very strong memories, both as a schoolgirl and as a sort of young adult, of her in that setting as well.
Did you ever come across Jennifer Hart, as she now is there? She used to visit there as well, and she's told me a bit about it.
Jennifer was a contemporary of mine at Sunville. And we introduced Jennifer and Herbert on a Cornish reading party, which I believe was at Trithias Cottage. In fact, I think that...
she's now got a Cornish cottage, no doubt.
Oh, that's the old family home that's in South Cornwall.
Yes.
That's Mabagissi, where we often stayed.
And is she... sort of light comes into her eyes when you mention Eva Hubbock, because she wrote a really good letter, I thought, for Diana Hopkinson, which is often a lively person for a young person.
I mean, the word generation gap meant really nothing to Eva, and this was, I think, one of the reasons that I became so friendly with her, and that she drew around herself a complete generation-wise cross-section of people. Of course, you'll have picked up all these amazingly interesting sort of lodgers that she had, because she befriended Tommy Balog and John Freeman. And I mean, her house was a great sort of centre of vitality and interest. But no, Jennifer's absolutely...
What was it? It was her vitality, was it? Her energy and her accessibility?
Yes, her warmth and her... interest in purposes and ideas, and she was never overcome by the difficulties or problems of her own particular situation. She had a sort of broad sweep and a great grasp, and she was a very joyous person. She made you feel better for seeing her. She had a very youthful spirit.
There's an interesting passage, actually.
Of course, when you've met Winifred, I'm so glad that you've been able to meet Winifred. Who is a very close friend of mine, and I have a lot of health service links with Winifred. And she's got this same quality, this drive, this zest. I mean, she's in her 80s now, and she stayed with me in my little hideout. last summer. And she was just like that, I mean, and she would say, look at, just hold it, just look at that. I mean, physically she can't now raise, but Eva's walking and swimming, and delight in the beauties of the world, this is absolutely true.
But it's also, I suppose, you felt you could say anything to her, would you? I mean, she wouldn't take offence as an idea that was unfamiliar.
No, she was completely unshockable, and this again was an amazing thing for a girl growing up in the 1920s. I mean, my parents were rather, I mean, they were very extremely public, extremely forward-looking in their public attitudes and very liberal and progressive. But in their private attitudes, they were, I suppose I should have to say, rather puritanical and conventional. And certainly she was, she opened a lot of vistas for me.
Sort of exhilarating adult. Yes. That's very interesting. Why didn't she actually get appointed to this Royal Commission?
Oh, I'm tremendously the right person to ask that question to. The question of appointing people to public inquiries, and I've been on that Royal Commission on two subsequent government inquiries, and now am chairman of a government inquiry on training people to look after mentally handicapped. But knowing a little about behind the scenes how these things happen, what they never want is somebody who is dedicated to a point of view. And I was bitterly disappointed that I wasn't appointed to the Ingleby Committee and to the SIBO Committee, because I had done a lot of writing and speaking on, in fact, had seen Butler when he was Home Secretary, seen him personally on various points about the 48 Children Act, which really led up to Ingleby. And then various further work I did, in a sense, led up to SIBO. But of course I couldn't be the person appointing, just exactly as Eva was so disappointed over the Population Commission, so was I disappointed over Ingleby and SIBO. Because what